attempted tape over it, but I got some of it on telephone.
Have thought again and again of what you said about Dick Wilkinson.
Sure.
And that little boy. And, you know, it just lingers in my mind. And
yeah.
I don't have a street. And I was just going to ask you what I was going to do with him. I was just going to ask you something again, some of those things about that. Are you too?
Oh, no. I'm all through for the day. I've got all my work done. As a matter of fact, I had most of it all done when you came. I wish you had stayed a little longer. No, I'm all through for the day. I've got everything finished. I just put my clothes away, and I told Tommy, I said, I'll play Old Maid with you for a little while. So that's all I've got to do this afternoon, is play Old Maid with Tommy. You know, that's the game, the card, you know?
Yeah.
It's a hard game, Old Maid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's all I have to do, so that's very important to me.
Tell me about the Justin and the little friend.
Well, these two were very, very close. Did you know him and his wife?
I knew him through you and Berman.
Oh, uh-huh.
Don't you remember?
Uh-huh.
That's
yes,
all
but
I
mean, you hadn't met the little grandson.
No.
Ahead. Well, he reminds me a lot of Johnny when Johnny was about 4 or 5 years old. He was about now, I think about 7 years of age. He was real friendly and only around his grandfather. You see, now since his grandfather passed away, he's been very shy and very timid, and he's still sort of withdrawn in himself because of him passing away. But before then, he was very lively, very quick, and he was just full of fun. This is what really hurts me, seeing this way. But they were always together, everywhere they went. Everywhere he went, he always had this little boy. He has other grandsons, but I think this one, probably was closer to his grandfather.
Well, now, you didn't go to the funeral, but
no,
Berman
I'm glad
told
I,
you about it.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'm glad I didn't, after Don Berman told me about the little boy, because I just couldn't have sat there and hear it.
Yeah.
I'd have had to get up and laugh. As far as the older folks, they were all reconciled to the fact,
yeah.
And they knew for years that he had a bad heart.
Yeah.
And
he told me he did, even the short time I talked to him.
But there was a wet tear in the whole room.
Yeah.
And really, when I was talking to her, all I could keep thinking about was this little boy. And he was standing right next to his grandmother all the time that she was visiting in that room.
Uh-huh.
And he heard all, it was being said. And I really had to shed a tear or two, and I tried to hold it back. But him standing there, and he wanted to talk to me so bad, and again, he wouldn't talk. He just felt what's wrong. But I'm just thankful that I didn't go up there to the
funeral.
Well, they claim that Berman said that it was very nice. Preacher preached a good sermon here for him, and it didn't last as long as some do.
I mean, about the little boy.
Well, I don't remember whether I told you the other day or not, but he walked up to the casket.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the service, just after the preacher had stepped into the pulpit. And he got well on the way with the services, the boy walked up to the casket. Evidently, he got away from his mother, who was in this side room, the family room.
Yeah.
And he walked up to the casket, and he put both hands on the casket. Berman said he thought at once that he was going to reach down and touch him, but he didn't. And he held right onto the casket and looked down at him as if he was silently talking to him. And he stood there for a long time, and the tears didn't come. And when they finally come, they came just as silently and without a bat of his eyes. Berman sat right there next to the front where he could watch the door. And he said the tears just rolled down. He said he wasn't crying. He was just silently weeping. And the tears just rolled down his cheek. And directly his mother would come and get him and take him back to the family. And then Berman said that he belonged there, then the tears would start appearing, you know, down his cheeks. But Berman said that was the hardest thing for him to take. And then a man, he said he didn't think he could sit there and see much more of it. You know, if he had come back up the last time, he said he appeared again, he said he'd have had to get up and look. But that was real pitiful.
You know, one thing that right touched me too is to see Berman was there, and then just a year or two before, you see, they were all touched. You know, I heard one of his friends, because his friend say that Dick was a fine fella, but he just couldn't stand see anybody make anything out of his trunk.
No, that's true, but that's business.
Yeah.
I mean, well, of course, now I don't believe in robbing anyone or trying to make a living all in one year, but I do believe in watching your business. But as for anyone trying to take anything from you, now, that's exactly what we had to do when we had Melons out here. Now, we had to watch him closely, very closely.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have had the neighbors hadn't warned us, you see, of him. And we did watch him very closely.
So public reputation.
Yes, he has that from way back when he was a fisherman.
Now, what was that at the time? I remember you talking at the time. He kept wanting to buy you out.
That's right. You see, when before we moved here, Dr. Evans, Harry Evans, had this place, and
yes.
Him and Mr. Wilkinson went together on their watermelon. And Mr. Wilkinson kept asking Dr. Evans to sell him out to sell his part to Mr. Wilkinson. And he kept wanting to buy this, you see. And Dr. Evans finally gave in and sold out to him. I don't remember what the price was that he sold out, but in the process, if he had held his part rather than sell, he would have gained around $7,000.
Yeah.
I think he sold for $3,000. I'm not sure. But if he had held out, he would have gained an extra $7,000 for his part. So after we heard this from Dr. Evans and heard the reputation of Mr. Wilkinson as to what you better watch, you see, we were on the alert, and we told him that once we got into this project, we would probably stick it through until the melons went to market. All this time, he kept after us to sell out to him, and he offered us $2,000. And then he came up. Toward the last, he came up to $3,000, and then $4,000, and then, of course, we'd have lost if we hadn't let him have it. But,
you even had misunderstandings about the amount of work, but Berman had to do some extra plowing or something.
No, he did all the plowing, but Berman, I remember there was quite a...
The irrigation.
Yes, he had, now Mr. Wilkinson brought his equipment out, and he was to take care of the irrigating, but evidently he couldn't get help on the days that he wanted help, and so Berman would have to be out there with him on the days that he would irrigate. And all different things like this, and really he put more into the project than he had thought we would, you know, from his conversation earlier. But still, we made on this one because I think I lost a lot of worry in that year.
You were really sweating.
I sure was. I don't know whether I'd want to go through it all again, though.
I don't think Berman would have done it if he hadn't kept it open.
I don't think so, no.
I remember I can see him out there now. They were loading those things. He's out there just to show them.
Oh, he'd get off from work and come home and shout for truckloads of melons.
Yeah.
He's afraid, you know. And a lot of times they skip a truckload.
Yeah.
And you don't get paid for this truck.
And he looks so cheap and
something. Pardon?
Berman looks so cheap and
something. He sure did.
Yeah.
But you know, it's hard to pull anything over on him. But I don't know. A lot of things that I would do would turn sour, but he does it somehow or another. He'll sweat to it, but it comes out right every time.
Shirley, let me tell you, that was a remarkable story you told about your neighbor over there, too, who died in that accident.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that so I can.
This one, Mr. Castle, you mean it drowned down the lake?
No, Mr.
Bass.
See, that name, Bernie Bass, I don't know, it's been familiar to me ever since I've been here. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, so many people know him. And he was just Cross Creek. If you wanted to know anything about the history of Cross Creek, all you had to do was just see Bernie Bass.
Yeah.
Everybody in New England knew out or knew of him. He was just a good old soul. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't help but like him. And I told you, he was agreeable to most anything you'd want to bring up. He just nodded his head and agreed. And he wouldn't get into a conversation there. And he wouldn't say a howdy to anyone without coming up with some kind of a joke. And this is one thing, too, where he was very humorous. You know, not very intelligent as far as educational wise, but he was very humorous conversation. And a lot of people remember him for this. But I don't know. I always wonder about, of course, I don't ever say anything to his wife or neighbors about because I can't be sure, and nobody else can be, but the story, you know, you've heard following this, about this other car that was on the road, and the bus driver not giving the full details to the patrolman. It's just one of those things that you just often wonder.
Yeah. And now, how was it, as you related it to me, this car, was it a truck, pickup truck?
No, he was in a pickup truck, Bernie was.
Well, what was the other car?
I don't know what the make or model was.
I see.
It was parked on the side of the road, is all I could find out.
And the two men were out in the road.
That's right. As if they were either hitchhiking or, but they had a can with them, you see, which appeared to them, this young girl and this other girl that was with her, coming from Gainesville, that they had run out of gas and that they were trying to flag someone down to go after some more gas for the car. So that's the way it appeared when they came by. And then they had no more got to the driveway here and passed. Bernie had passed these two girls, the neighbors over here. He had passed them. They were coming from Gainesville, and he was going towards Gainesville, or going towards Highway 20. And the bus, Greyhound bus, which gets to our driveway about 6 o'clock every evening, maybe 5 minutes one way or the other, but usually right about 6, was following another vehicle and Bernie. So this other vehicle had passed Bernie and gone off. And Bernie came up then on this car that was parked alongside the road next, you see.
Yeah.
So whether they tried to stop him or what, we just don't know.
Yeah.
But they did hightail it when Bernie turned over. They didn't stop to try to help or anything. They just disappeared.
Yeah.
And of course, the bus driver was coming up on them about this time. And he was noticing Bernie going over and over, you see, and coming to rest inside the road. And by that time, the car was well out of sight.
Yeah.
But
he didn't even notice the car.
Well, he noticed the car, but he couldn't get the license plate. If he did, he doesn't want it to say. He won't report it. But usually, they're pretty helpful. And I don't know, maybe he didn't see it. But a lot of them thought that maybe he did. This is the way it was told to us. But now I just don't know. Maybe those fellas just got scared and left. It could have been, but they were frightened. I stayed inside the house.
Well, that's sad, isn't it?
It is, but the only thing now, she's come to console herself by thinking that she did run out of the road and lose control and turn over. She doesn't really believe that he had that much to drink. He had some of it, but he wasn't that bad, because the fellow that sold him his last beer down here at the creek was Wally, down at Wally's Kid Camp, said that he was not drinking that heavy. Capable of having a crook. So whatever happened, we don't know. Whether he, they thought at first he might have had a heart attack and stepped on the accelerator. You know, he put one heavy on the accelerator. But he was alive when they put him in the ambulance. But he was just barely breathing.
Well, now, how's she getting along? How does it affect her?
Well, she's quite lonesome, and she's still quite moody, of course. And the legal bit of mention of him puts her in tears.
Oh, really?
I think she's doing quite well.
Mm-hmm. Well, she has a lot more property than I've ever had.
Well, yes, and she asked us the other night about consulting a lawyer and providing some, you know, pieces for her children in case anything should happen to her. She was asking a lot about a lot of legal aspects that she might do, but I told her to go and find another man, get married and enjoy life. She laughed at that and said, well, I don't know. She's a good little worker.
Yeah.
I think that women to be lonely and despondent the way she is so much, I think I'd get out and try to enjoy life a little more.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to stay gone. I mean, she doesn't need to go home. But
oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you.
What is it about him?
No.
Well, I thought I had. Yes, that happened here about 3 weeks ago. I thought I had told you about that Friday. He was, yes, that is terrible. I have, however, it is not as bad as Mrs. Jeffries says it is. I mean, she's looking at it. Of course, she sees it a lot worse than other people do. But he is doing better now, and I don't know whether she told you, but she called me this morning and said that they will not have to amputate his leg, that they will have to take a portion of his big toe on his right leg, right foot, but it's not as bad as you need to feel, but still it's bad.
Well, this, she said that this steel up there had been there for 20 years and never burned.
Pardon me? He was in there trying to select some pieces of steel that he wanted to cut, from what I gather. And Berman said that the way he was in there, from the way it was described to both of us, that he had no business getting among that steel the way he did. That they should have worked that steel from the outside in, having to go inside among all these pieces that were leaning in different directions and try to select a piece of iron the size he needed.
Mm-hmm.
But Berman said he more or less asked for it the way he went into the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I still haven't got a picture in my mind exactly how it all happened, but it was a thing that could have been eliminated if he had approached that room properly.
Come on in about Johnny. I didn't quite get that. You were over there, and you were telling, you were relating some of these about the people.
Yes. You see, last year, Johnny, remember I had so much trouble over there with him and his homework, trying to get homework for him to do and trying to get the teacher to express to him how to keep a notebook?
I remember one thing you said. said was that she had found out with your insisting that he hadn't learned it the particular way there.
Yes, that's right. She had him skipping around so much in his mathematics, and this was his favorite subject.
Yeah.
He hardly had time to grasp one thing before she'd move to another, you see. And then she'd go back and repeat maybe division or multiplication or something like this, and then go back up to fractions, multiple fractions, or something like this. And then she had him going and coming, you might say. And it wasn't only counting. There was over two-thirds of the class that had F in mathematics, you see.
Oh, no, I didn't realize that.
Yes, the whole class has suffered. That's what really hurt me. I thought, well, maybe Johnny's slow, you know, and he just wasn't grasping it. So when I got to checking the other children, and oh boy, even the best math students there was making barely C. So and they had some help with it from older brothers or sisters, you see, and they had a little bit more. But the whole class, I think a lot of other parents also finally got to the end of school that were complaining about the grades. But the one thing that bugged me more than anything was that she would grade them high, yet they weren't doing the work.
Okay.
See, I really don't know how in the world he passed last year, other than it was her grading him higher than what he should have been. Because he certainly wasn't doing the work. He didn't know the work. You know, if a child knows the work, you can set him down at home or anywhere and ask him multiplication or to divide this problem. And a fifth grade problem was hard for him to answer. So he definitely wasn't getting through to it. And that's what and it wasn't only in spelling, it was in social studies. Now
you were at this year.
Pardon?
When was that?
No, this was during last year. Now
yes.
This year when I went up to this past Friday when I went to the school and I had these three people there in the room, which will be one of them is Johnny's math teacher for this year, Mr. Turner.
Yes.
Mrs. Cleveland was more or less an associate for the family and pupil discussion, if you see.
Yes.
Mr. Egress has all the problems of the high school children. And he'll sit down to listen to any of their complaints to try to help them in any problems they have. So these two people were a big help to me. And Mr. Turner, who's a new teacher this year, and is very young and very eager to teach. And he looks like he's a very dedicated man. He talks like him. So this is why I say I don't think I have any problems with Johnny this year, because I think now he'll finally get some work to do.
Now, what did he tell you?
His main conversation with me was that he wasn't going to be Johnny's teacher.
Yeah.
That
he said he was not going to be Johnny's teacher.
That's right. That confused me, and then I asked him to clarify that, and he said, well, I'm going to be his buddy. His teacher, and he said, I'm going to stick to Johnny closer than his skin, you see. And he's going to be closer to Johnny than his skin, in other words, is what he said. And so he's really showing me that he's interested and he's wanting to help.
So your worry is that's
I hope so. I told him, I said, now listen, I said, if I'm coming back in a month. And I said, I'm going to do my share at home. And I said, I want to see some notes in his notebook, and I want to see him doing homework. And I said, I won't be back before the month's out. But I said, if he doesn't do the homework, I'll be back. I don't know whether they thought I was too rough or what it was, but they said certainly that they would help him. I felt like they understood the problem that I went through the last 2 years over there. There'll certainly be a change. I feel that way now anyway.
You know, I'm not over there, and I can't speak for them, but I'm over as far as they don't feel that you are.
Well, they certainly appreciated me going over there, at least they seemed. They were so happy that I went in to explain all this, you see. And they're going to take the time to go over there to explain and admit to themselves that there is something wrong.
That's right. There's
not very many that's going to do it, and therefore the children are suffering. And there's so many in Johnny's room last year, you see, that's made poor grades. In a way, they don't understand the work, but then they got to, when it came time for report card time, they were graded higher than what they should have been.
Well, now, Shirley, you have to confess that you do have some like remarkable experiences over there. Now, you have to put up with it, but you have also done like remarkable things, too, over there. And
yes. Well, up till now, up till Friday, it hadn't done very much good. But now, Friday, I came away feeling like I had accomplished a great deal.
Yeah.
And I think now that they understand the problem, and somebody now, these people now that listen, know the way that I feel and know Johnny's problems. And I think now something can be done about it because they're interested.
Yeah.
But before, I just couldn't reach anyone that was interested enough that would take time to help.
Well, I'd say it's the right exciting part of the world where you live over there. It's certainly not all quiet, is it?
I wish it were. I wish there was nothing to worry about. I could sit in a rocking chair and just rock my life away. Oh, this morning a friend of mine that lives there in Gainesville, she says, come and visit with me, you know. I said, well, when the children are all in school, I'll have more time on my hands and I know what to do. I said, I'd be happy to. So she called me this morning. She said, Shirley, what's happened? Your school started here about 2 weeks ago. She said, where have you been? I said, let me tell you something. I said, I barely get my babies off to school in the morning. And I have to pick Tommy up at 11:30. Danny comes home at 1:45, and the others come in at 3:45. And I said, there goes my day. I said, I thought that I would enjoy the freedom of an unwashed hippie. Like that lady says, when they get into school, but now I can see where I'm. And then Berman comes home and says, boy, you must have had an easy day today. All the children in school, you know, I could pop him one. But I just barely get things done, and here comes Tommy.
Yeah.
And then I can't lay down and rest. He's ready to play.
Yeah.
So it's just another constant. I thought, though, just before you drove, or when you drove up, I was anxious to see Tommy in a way because I knew he had either good news for me or bad news, whichever way you want to look at it. Carrying a paper when he got off of the bus. And I was reading it when you had drove down there to the pool this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a notice as to whether he would be going until 11:30 every day now for the rest of the school session, or whether he would be going the full day, you see, and coming home on the late bus.
Yeah.
And then they would all come home at 4 o'clock or 3:45. But I was hoping beyond hope that he would be coming home on his late bus and this is going to mean the full day. But now the notice says that he will be returning home every day at 11:30.